you gotta wait till we're talking about all this stuff.
Isn't it worth
it? He's trying to get it going. He's trying to get the party started. Let me just give you guys a quick intro here. We're at Carmen's Street Guitars with Captain Kirk Douglas of The Roots, of 100 Watt Heart, of Carmen's Street Guitars, the movie.
As the case may be, yeah.
Yes, of many things. Mm-hmm. Excellent guitar player. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. Thanks, great to be here, man.
So, Rick, what were you saying?
This is. I think we have to make Kirk a turkey guitar to play on the flip.
Yeah, the joke is it won't sound good. You know, that'll be the big challenge.
You have to put it out of key real bad.
I guess all you need to do is just ruffle the six pegs up there to get a turkey sound. But. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with the parade. We did it last year.
Yeah.
We tend to.
In the last few years,
I mean, it's. I don't know if we've ever done like 2 years in a row. We used to back in the day.
Yeah. What was the year that you did the bird in the word? That was the best.
Oh, man. Wow.
That was so good.
But we were watching it. I don't know if we cooked the ear apartment or not.
Wow. Was that during the pandemic?
No, I don't think so.
I think that was like. Probably pre
2 years ago, I think it was.
No.
I mean, it's crazy to have a life when you're like thinking back on which Thanksgiving Day parades were done, and to get to the point where you like, you know, it seems like the type of thing's like, oh, I know exactly what song we did. I knew it, but to have done it so many times that it's just like you'll have to remind me. It's like it just reminds me of like Kirk. Just be thankful. I mean, it's Thanksgiving, we're talking about Thanksgiving, right? I mean, I'm thankful for all of the years that, you know, be able to do that and to have the gig, you know. Yeah. It's, doing the gig and, like, getting a call from, you know, people in your that you went to elementary school with, you know, old teachers, and just to get random texts like, hey, just saw you in the parade. You know, that's just, it's kind of sweet,
so
you know.
Great. I look forward to that, seeing the float come by.
I'm just as happy when we don't do it, too, because it's like, when we don't, then it's just, it's when we do it, it's like, you're waking up at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
You're like at a hotel in Manhattan. You're like trying to coordinate, you know, your family seeing the parade, getting them seats. You're trying to coordinate seeing, you know, having a Thanksgiving of your own.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of times we'll do the Thanksgiving parade, and then later on we'll tape the Tonight Show same day, and then later on you're going to Thanksgiving dinner, and after that you're
midnight.
Yeah, crazy. You're asleep before your head hits the pillow. You know. But again, it's fun. It's like it's a blessing to get to be tired from stuff like that.
Yeah, once a year.
Yeah,
Turkey Day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna ask what I always do. how'd you originally find out about Carmine Street, or what was like the first time you were here? Or
man, well, I mean, because I had to, you know, wait a little bit for you to get the battery for this thing. I got to walk around the neighborhood, walk around the street, and it was just really nostalgic because I, you know, prior to playing guitar in the Roots, I played guitar for various different bands in Manhattan, playing Joe's Pub, CBGBs, and stuff like that. But I was also a preschool teacher during the day. And one of the things we used to do is take the kids to the park, Carmine Park, around here. So, you know, I mean, just I used to live over on Grove Street, around the corner in, you know, West Village.
Yeah.
And part of the gig as a preschool teacher, you'd have like this sort of, you'd have this rope, and there'd be all these little like pulley things that all the kids.
Oh, we see that.
We've seen them walk by the car ride on the way to the pool.
And you know, as a guitar player, I would try to, you know, get the kids, you know, it's always part of community exposure. It's like our version of, you know, you watch Mr. Rogers and, oh, we're going to, you know, meet the people in your neighborhood. So just, you know, coming in here, you know, Rick was one of the people in your neighborhood. And so I used to bring him in here, and this is a place where
I didn't even
and you give them the talk. Just like, okay, if you want to talk about bulls in a china shop. This place, it's just, yeah. you look the wrong way, you may knock something over. Yeah. So just I have to give them the talk, like, yeah. do not touch anything. Yeah. If you touch anything and break anything, it's your parents are going to have to buy it, you know? So that usually was effective. And just bring them in here and they'd be like in awe of.
Yeah.
And it's so cool because coming in here today, everything is so well preserved from that time. It really feels like stepping back in time, but stepping back at a time where, like, I was a preschool teacher dreaming about a career in music, and that seemed so highly unlikely.
Yeah.
But so it's through coming in here, and I'd bring him to Matt Umanov's too, and just bring him wherever on our way to. When we go to McDonald's Park, there's like a park for kids over there, bring the kids to Matt Umanov's there, and then coming down to this park, I'd bring him into Carmine Street Guitar. So, and after I got the gig with the Roots, you know, I'd still come in periodically and just to see how you're doing, see how the shop's doing, making sure it's still here, as I would start to see bits of New York disappearing over time. So it's just always been sort of a fixture, a place you'd go in and sort of look at guitars that you couldn't afford, and that was a place for that. And then I, you know, got the gig with the Roots, and I would still continue to come in here. And on one particular day in, I believe it was 2008, I came in feeling really good. I was probably a little high, and I had a day off, and I remember coming in, and I heard this guitar that's in my hands now. I heard this guitar through, I believe, through this amp.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, it was a Philco amp made by Phil. And the combination was just so, there was just something indescribable about it. It was just so clean and pure, and upon looking at what was producing the sound, it's just, it had such direct circuitry. There's so minimal, it's passing through so little, such a little small amount of circuitry. It was so direct. And that purity really came through in the sound that was coming out of the speakers. And then, you know, I came to really understand at that moment what we were dealing with here with the woods and their origin.
Yeah.
You know, once I was able to, you know, have a conversation about that with the idea and the prospect of my mind of maybe I can actually buy this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went home, and that's usually a test when you leave a guitar shop and then you're still thinking
about it.
Yeah, if you're still thinking about it, like, you know, days later, it's like, okay, we're going to have to do something about this.
Yeah.
And this guitar is particularly, I mean, I may be repeating some of what I spoke about in the Carmine Street film. I still haven't seen it yet, so I don't know exactly what I said.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm
free.
I'm not going to tell I'm really old, you know? I'm already significantly older, but I want to wait until I'm, like, really old, and I can, like, watch and be like, damn, that was, look at my hair.
I looked good back then.
But yeah, so I was just attracted to the sound of it and also the look of it. Just this just looked like black lightning.
Lightning bolt.
Lightning bolt going into the pickup, which was, it was just so natural, nice. But also so electric, and just thinking about how natural electricity is.
Probably was electric. It probably was the lightning hit the tree and that caused that to happen. It looks like
as the folklore
could only be that.
Yeah. and then years later, you know, after just discovering the beauty of single pickup guitars and other players that fancied single pickup guitars, and hearing about Jeff Beck's Esquire.
That's who's on the back, right? I was just going to ask, who's on the back?
Yeah, that's Jeff Beck's signature. When he came to play SNL, great. I forgot who he was playing with. I think it was Jeff Beck and somebody else. I forgot who else. But I knew he was in the building, and I was like, if I can get him to sign this guitar, it would be just so complete.
Yeah,
and so I left it with the stage manager and begged her to see if she could get him to sign it. And he did. And then later, he appeared on our show with Brian Wilson, I think.
Oh, wow.
And after the performance, they went to eat across the street at Del Frisco Steakhouse, and I was in there getting a drink, and I saw him, and I asked him if he remembered signing a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh yeah, really thick neck, and everything was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, just to make sure that nobody replicated his signature just to fool me. It was really him.
Verification.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's but somewhere in there, I guess I answered your question how I discovered
the Carmine
guitars. And this guitar just has followed me throughout, and just I've always loved it as a recording guitar. Just
so cool.
Yeah, just various recordings, and I have that band 100 Watt Heart. That's like kind of like my kind of solo project, quasi solo project that I do with the drummer Rick Sheridan, and on a couple songs on that recording, this guitar is just incredible. It's just integral to. There's a song on it, Over the Ocean, and it's like on the recording I use like a heavier guitar tone, but things I love about this guitar is like how even with an overdriven amp, like you could still hear like the notes of the strings, like you could hear the string to string definition and the clarity. Yeah. You hear like the character of the chord with it. But yes, there's, you know, I have plenty of guitars by now, and just this guitar has like this je ne sais quoi to it that just breathes this, I don't know, just that sounds like just purity, authenticity.
It's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
It came from the Bowery.
Yeah. And to the fact that you have so many of these woods around that you can, it's just really
it's such a blessing. I mean, these trees were just, you know, 1,000-year-old trees. There was nobody here. American Indians didn't cut the trees then. You know?
Yeah.
So then they built the whole city out of it, and we got the largest repository of old growth in Manhattan, mm-hmm. these old buildings. And it's just, they throw it away. They don't know what it is, first of all. And then they don't want to, you know, not charge the owner for some material, so they just discard it. We go dumpster diving and get it.
Yeah. Well, when you do that, you wind up with these sort of like an instant vintage situation.
Yeah, it's like it's been indoors for 200 years. Like, what, you know, what is this stuff? What has it seen? This room alone, you know, it's 1900. You know, all those timbers underneath this tin.
Yeah.
Roof here has been here that long, and then you go to this wall and forward, and now you got 1827, it's free Civil War. You know, it's just there was no horses. I mean, there was no cars.
Right,
it was only horses.
Yeah,
there was more horses than people.
Right.
I just started taking wood out of 148 Sullivan, and it's a stable.
That's crazy.
And it's in the basement, and I realized, you know, these bigger buildings, you know, they were tenement buildings, and they had horses too. They needed, you know, to go places. So where did they put them? They put them in the basement. They had ramps going down from outside.
Jeez. That's crazy. We tore the whole
beautiful
all the stables down.
When was this? Thing.
It's over on 148 Sullivan.
Right below Houston.
Yeah.
How long ago were you doing this?
Yeah, there's still some wood I should
like
go over and get.
Like early summer, yeah.
Yeah, there's still some wood down there. Yeah, I got a whole bunch already.
Yeah, we got a lot of it.
But it's the same stuff, you know, cut nails. It's all 1800s earlier, you know. It's cool.
Brooklyn, too.
Yeah, it's the same wood everywhere.
Flatbush wood and everything.
Yeah.
I live out there, too.
Okay.
Yeah, but you're from New York, right?
Yeah, I was born in Brooklyn, but I had my, I lived from ages of 5 to 23. I lived in Long Island.
Oh, yeah, we're back.
Exit 61 off the expressway.
Oh, a little further than me. I grew up in Bayshore, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went to Bayshore High.
All right. Yeah, I went to Sachem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's so cool that, you know, you have, you know, kids, people that weren't even a glimmer in their parents' eye, you know, around the time that this wood was around.
Forget
They're able to, like, play this stuff.
And, it's gave it a new life. It was just a timber in the building, and now it can go for it. I just was doing a body and still has one of the old nails in, and I kind of managed to build a whole guitar and leave the nail in it, and I kept thinking about how long that nail's been in that board.
This has nails, like, nail holes
in
this
one. Yeah, it's
all
got nail holes,
You have the nail holes, you have the eye.
Yep.
The eyes in here, where the branches are, I guess. The branches.
The knots from the knots. Branches,
Right.
Where's that wood from? Where'd you say?
This is from Jim's Loft. This is the early
Jim Jarmusch?
Yeah, oh, this, wow. is, this right. came oh, out of Jim's Loft.
I have one also from.
Yeah, you have one from there, too.
I have one, too.
Yeah, the first, I think about the first 70 guitars I got were all from that batch of wood, that first batch of wood from 184 Bowery. He doesn't live there anymore, but so I can say the place now.
184 Bowery.
Yeah.
Okay. So he won't be there if
you
go
it's down by Broome Street.
Yeah, and I love how just the, you could just see where the strings go in, like they're, it's like right up against the wood here.
Yeah.
So just every opportunity for resonance.
George and Leo, George Fullerton, I think he did the actual outline and the shape, the headstock design, but they didn't have six in line tuners. Nobody made them. So the first one had that snake head because he could only get three on a side, but he had this already in his head because he made the snake head in 5/4 stock. It didn't have a back angle like all the Gibsons had.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to use Gibson tuners on it. So he just made it the same way with the three on the side until he got number two prototype, and then it had the six alone.
If you look at this, you can also see how it has the Block Kelly logo on the headstock.
Oh, yeah.
But I requested...
the decal?
Yeah, it had the decal, exactly. But I was like, it's so cool to have...
The brand.
It's like your signature on there.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even remember doing that.
Yeah.
We did it over. That's cool.
Yeah.
What was the first guitar you got? When did you start playing?
I was 10 years old, and the first guitar, I mean, to be technical, I guess it was a broom. You know, I used to, like, pretend to play. You know, it was like
my first drum set. It was turned over chairs and
you're just
chandelier
like
for a cymbal.
It's like your body knows, like, it's supposed to be, I'm supposed to be playing something, you know, and then it was like you graduate to a tennis racket, and then it was like, then there was the piece of wood that would keep our door at the back of the house locked. It was like, you know, a piece of wood like that. That was almost like the thickness of a fretboard. And then there was this company called Memphis, and they had these, like, I still have the body at my mom's house. My mom's still in the house I grew up in.
Oh, cool.
And I still have that guitar. I don't have the headstock on it anymore. I broke that off at some point because it's a tilted back headstock. But it's called a Memphis. And I started when I was like in 10th, I was 10 years old in the fifth grade. And I remember when my parents told me that they were going to buy the guitar, I remember just running around the house. I was so excited, just screaming. Up till then, it was just like the closest you could get to a guitar was in the windows of the guitar shops.
Yeah.
And I would just sit there and, like, you know, how some kids would look at, you know, toy cars or anything. Like, I would just look in the windows and dream of having one. And then, I used to get guitar magazines. So then I started getting familiar with the brands and just.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I ever seen a Memphis.
Had a few over the years.
Oh, really? Okay.
They were Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah. There were some of the early imported guitars.
Right.
Yeah, the Japanese. And,
they're like the Tokais and stuff or different?
Yeah, they
not
were very
high quality.
Yeah.
I don't think.
It wasn't the highest quality, but they were reasonable, and you could get them, you know, locally.
I never really saw them in any magazines.
No.
Yeah.
And I graduated from there to a Vantage.
Oh yeah.
Another Japanese brand.
Another Japanese. Yeah.
But didn't see those in any magazines either. But I was just, you know, back then, you know, in the guitar magazines, it's like, oh, one day maybe I can get an Aria Pro 2 or an Ibanez or a Gibson or a Fender.
Yeah.
or Takai or, you know, just but, you know, I just, in my mind, I just, and also MTV, you know, this is the time when you're just seeing MTV. And I was just transfixed by the sound of the instrument and the look of the instrument. And
you got to play the MTV guitar out
Oh, yeah, yeah, I saw that. I saw that out there. The next guitar after that, I think I got a Kramer. That's what was after the, and it because the cool thing about that had a Floyd Rose, you know, and then you're able to like use the whammy bar without it going out of tune. And then I got, you know, I was into Van Halen and all that, so just, you know, you're able to do those dive bombs. And then you get a little bit older, and then I started to get into Hendrix and started to get into Zeppelin, that kind of classic rock, and then started to get into Living Color, Vernon Reid, and bands like those. And so yeah, that, and it was Kramer's for a while, and then I got a Fender, I got a Telecaster, like a style like the Black Keith Richards style.
Humbucker.
Yeah, I got one of those, and that was really exciting. And I got a Strat. I remember buying a Strat from my guitar teacher. And so, yeah, then for a long time, it was mainly that a Kramer, a Strat, and that Keith Richards Tele. And
you still have any of this?
I still have the Strat. It was a Strat Plus that I bought from my guitar teacher. It was like a gray burst.
Mm-hmm.
I still have that. And that's an excellent sounding guitar. That's somewhere on the most recent recording I've done.
What year was that?
It was probably 89.
80 something.
Yeah.
They were pretty good then.
Yeah. When they're set up right, they're really good guitars.
Yeah.
With the Lace sensors and everything.
Cool. Yeah.
And when I moved, I was in a band called Binzy Poplars, and that was kind of like a shoegazer type of band. I don't know if you're familiar with that terminology, but bands that were famous for like My Bloody Valentine and the Cocteau Twins, where the guitar is like more of a textural instrument as opposed to something that you are soloing on. And I got really into bands like those, and Binzy Poplars was that type of band, using a lot of effects and just kind of like ethereal sounding. And then I moved into Manhattan, and shortly after I moved into Manhattan, that band broke up. But like somebody that was like in a long term relationship, I started to, you know, when I discovered, I can be kind of like musically single and I guess musically promiscuous. And I started like playing with like a bunch of different bands and playing with poets and playing with, you know, just whoever would have me, you know. Yeah. And then shortly thereafter, I got to befriend Vernon Reid from Living Color.
Great guitar player.
Yeah. And an amazing human being. And I remember around this time, I started getting into like funkadelic, and I started to get into like just more like music that where the guitar had like a more of a natural sound, and bands like the Black Crowes and and around that time, I was playing with a drag queen. First gig I had when I moved into Manhattan was playing with a drag queen by the name of Hedda Lettuce.
Oh.
The first person to like actually pay me for playing guitar was I'll always have
always.
Her, yeah. him, they to thank for that. And I remember I was on my way to a Hedda Lettuce gig at Don Hills. And then I saw Vernon Reid. I think the first time I met Vernon was at a art exhibit at the Whitney Museum. And I went to him and I was like, listen, I know you don't know me from Adam, but I know the way that you feel about Carlos Santana, I know you're a big fan of his, that's how I feel about you. So just, And around the time, Living Color was, I guess, breaking up. So we had a little bit. He had a little bit more time to talk to me. You know. But anyhow, fast forward to that day. I had the gig at with Head of Lettuce at Don Hills. I saw Vernon Reid in the street, and I was like, "Oh, Vernon, you know, tonight I'm going to go see this band, The Roots." And they were playing five nights in a row at the Knitting Factory. Mm-hmm. And Vernon's like, "Oh, I'm actually playing with The Roots tonight." And I was like, "Oh, I guess I'll see you there." And then he's about to drive off. He's like, "Oh, by the way, when's your birthday?" And I was like, "Oh, September 30th. I was like, "Okay, cool." And then I just, that was it. I it was sort of random him asking me that. Uh-huh. And I went to see The Roots play. I went to see The Roots three out of those five nights. And like, you know, it was the Knitting Factory, was like $15 in.
The old one on Mary Street?
The old one. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then a few months later, I got a call from my ex-roommate. And that ex-roommate said, "Hey, Vernon Reid called looking for you." Hmm. I was like, "Oh wow!" He says he has something for you. So I mean, it was just after my birthday. I'm thinking, "Oh, maybe he's got like a book or something." Because around the time he signed one of my Hendrix books, and the Hendrix book was called Crosstown Traffic. Yeah. It was dedicated to Vernon, and I had him sign it. Wow. And I guess I've always been into signatures from younger. And so anyhow, I got to, at the time, Vernon lived on 30th Street, and he's like, "Yeah, come over, and I have your birthday gift," you know? So I went to where he lived, and I stayed out in the hallway, you know? He came out, and then he came out with a huge flight case. And I was like, "That's not a book," I'm thinking. And then he lays on the ground, he opens it, and it was a, like, I think from 69 or 70, it was a gold top Gibson Les Paul.
Whoa.
I've never, up to that point, I don't think I've ever seen one so close.
Yeah.
And he said, he's like, "I'm not trying to buy your friendship." I remember these words, like it was yesterday. It's like, "I'm not trying to buy your friendship. If we never ever see each other ever again, that's totally cool. But this is yours now."
That's such a great tradition, guitar players giving guitar players guitars.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool. Happened so many times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and it's just like, and if you've never had that happen to you before, you're not thinking, "Oh, this is just what happens. This is like a huge deal."
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, and he's like, "The only thing I ask is that maybe one day if you meet somebody and you feel like they should have this guitar, you pass it on to them."
Cool.
And I was like, you can't be serious. He's like, "Well, you should probably just take it before I change my mind." And with that, I remember it was like a heavy-ass case, a heavy-ass guitar.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was still living on Grove Street. I walked from 30th Street all the way home to Grove Street.
Switching
and I did
hands.
Not feel a thing.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, it was 69.
Yeah. And I just remember the feeling of like walking past people and like wanting to just tell them what just happened to me. You know, this is, I guess, before, you know, posting.
Yeah.
But just having that feeling, it's like, oh, something just amazing just happened. And but just so holding cool. that within. And then I remember shortly after that going to like jam with people and then bringing that guitar with me to jam to people. And just, it was the first time I really encountered, you know, what humbuckers are supposed to sound like in a body like that.
Yeah.
And just, it really gave me this sort of sonic confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to that rhythm pickup and play, it's just, there's this feeling, it's like, oh, if I feel a little bit timid, you know, those humbuckers really let me know that it's safe to let other people know that I'm in the room, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I played that guitar, from... He gave it to me for my 24th. That was my 24th birthday. And I met the cats from The Roots when I just turned 30. But when I auditioned for The Roots, I auditioned with a Strat, though. I think I just felt like the music probably just called for more. In such a big band, it called for more of that sound that didn't take as much sonic space. But that's sort of my... like my like magical the connection. One of the first of many magical New York stories, you know.
Do you still have it, or did you?
I don't. I passed that guitar on to a cat named Asim Barnes. Nice. And I hear that guitar is no longer with him. I think he may have passed it on, but I'm not sure if he passed it on intentionally or not. I'm not exactly sure. That guitar is out there floating somewhere.
It's out there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gold top. It's got like a routing for a pickup selector in between the two volume knobs. So that's one of its identifiable characteristics. Yep. If you see a gold top,
that has an extra hole in the middle.
It's got the kind of like the sandwich along the side. I think it's like two pieces of wood. Those are its telltale signs.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's out there somewhere. I hope whoever has it is using it to great effect.
Yeah, probably don't know the story behind either.
But I mean, they're magical instruments and just the way it came into my life, you never know what kind of life it's having.
Right.
It's,
well, that's what's great about them is they outlive us and they go on and on. There's been some cool books written like that. I think there's one about a squeeze box that goes, and then there's one about the red violin
that
goes through many different owners and all the stories that go along with it. But yeah, that's why I make them.
Yeah, when you think about like all the stories that go on, I mean, get pretty metaphysical about it before the point of sounding ridiculous. You know, it's true. A real.
They're magical. For sure.
Yeah. You know, when you think of like feeling in a good mood and like encountering somebody, and then you're in a better mood, like it's not hocus pocus magic, but it's magic nonetheless.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're involved in the carrying on, like giving people their, you know, you're giving people their magic wands, so to speak. Like when you think of like Harry Potter, it's like not just wand, it's like whatever your weapon or wand of choice is.
They're really
Stuart
magic.
Stuart Herwood says too.
Who?
What Stuart Herwood does with the drones. He's working with Laurie Anderson, but he was Lou Reed's tech for. He was in the movie too, actually.
Oh wow.
But he does like drone performances with the guitars, and he does like a wall of sound type stuff. But he does huge performances with the guitars.
Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah. I totally have heard of this.
Yeah, he actually gets
I'll send you a link.
He has them feeding back so much, and they're in a circle.
Yeah.
And the guitars will freestand.
Yeah. They'll just stand
just
up.
Just from the feedback.
And just keep.
Yeah.
And he'll do like 6-hour performances. But he did one in St. John the Divine, actually.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, it was incredible.
They're doing a drone performance for the Halloween parade, actually. They're
gonna
have
that's right. He's
going to
be in the parade.
Oh, wow.
You'll probably see him in the parade.
Oh, good to know.
Sarah, my wife, was pregnant when we went to that performance at the church at St. John, and she was like, she was like, I could feel the baby just like going crazy.
Yeah.
Just like dancing around and feeling the
music. Uses a couple
of
loose.
I got sick last minute
tellies,
and I couldn't make it. I was so bummed.
It was so good. Yeah, Laurie Anderson was there too. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you think of like a baby in the womb, like, you haven't seen anything yet. There's not much to go by. You're just existing in this space. It's like we who are out in the world see so much.
Yeah.
You know, we know what's happening, but like for that being vibration like that, that's got to be
so
like,
yeah.
And they're like in fluid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like the sound waveforms travel in fluids so much further.
Yeah.
And like a lower frequency.
Like the whales.
It, like, you know.
Other mammals.
Encompasses you. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy cool. feeling.
My but, wife, she does sound baths, actually.
Oh, see?
No, yeah, yeah. Cool. She, we have like a 45, 50-inch gong in our place. We have like three huge gongs in our apartment.
Chinese awesome. Gongs?
Well, Turkish. Well, it's a Zildjian, oh, so that's, okay. that's yeah, Turkish. Yeah, Turkish. There's a Zildjian, there's a Paiste, and I don't remember what the other brand is. But, I mean...
What are the mallets? Are they like,
she's got various mallets.
Kind of mallets, yeah.
She's got... Not only does she have different mallets, but she has these things that... They almost look like big lollipops. Huh. But the part that would look like the candy, yeah. it's not... It's plastic. Felt? It's like rubber.
Oh, it's like rubber.
And then yeah. she can like kind of like rub it against the gong way. And get these sort of yeah, like she gets these like whale sounds. Yeah, yeah.
You gotta look at her
so
Instagram.
Cool.
Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you've seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. between that, the swimming bowls, I mean, just you talk about relaxation.
Yeah.
She really creates an immersive experience
That's
with
cool.
that,
so cool.
And just you know, and I think about it just like how relative it is, like what we do to like with those instruments and what it does for people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, just if you've ever, just the pleasure of like standing before a loud, you know, amp, you know, amp of your choice, you know, and just, you know, I have like a 100-watt Marshall, you know, and just like playing a chord on that and just standing in front of that, that's a full body experience,
yeah, for sure.
you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about thousands of years ago before electricity, and, you know, if you hit a gong and you put your head up next to it, it's like the intensity of, you know, you're getting like a low-end experience that nowadays you would look to an 808 for. Nowadays you would look to speakers to provide you with. But before there were speakers, we don't even know of a time, not even you, like, remember a time... a time before speakers, you know what I mean? And so to be able to have that, to experience that low-end experience, you know, that's probably one of the first things, you know, aside from thunder. You
yeah,
know,
thunder.
It's
yeah.
like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. So when you put, you know, so I think about that, it's just like, man, that's amazing that you can still have that. But I also have, I can't help but point out the difference. Just like, now, like, you see, like, our living room and how we have all these gongs in it. Mm-hmm. It's like, just imagine for a second if these were all Marshall stacks.
Yeah.
You'd be so upset yeah. with me. Like, that would, you know, the gongs look so beautiful. Yeah, yeah. And, like, the Marshall stacks would look good for me, but I don't think she would
go for that.
Nah, I don't think she'd go for that.
There is there's like a woman who does like heavy metal, kind of like doom metal yoga at St. Vitus. I don't know if they still do it. I know
doom
they did it.
Doom metal yoga.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, like if you know those bands like Sleep or Om.
Yeah,
or
oh yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So just it's just like them. They'll play that but be doing yoga. So you get this like intense, like low end vibration.
Yeah,
while you're like,
I gotta check that out. I mean, their tempos are pretty, you know, like stoner metal and stuff like that. Like the tempos are not like fast. So I could see there's a relaxation element to that. Mm. I'd be curious to check it out.
Yeah,
it's like meditative, like you're trying to plug into whatever that is where you are.
Yeah.
Or like, it's like that thing, like, I was reading, it's like a guitar player's brains will like sync up to a drummer, you know, because it's like this, a social thing that happens. When you start playing, it's like the drummer will play and then a guitar player will know how to like sync up and then like a bass or like, you know, the rest of the band.
Yeah.
It's like very intuitive. And it's like the more you do it, the more you are able to do it better
and
faster and quicker.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a similar concept to that of like a drum circle, you know, just a bunch of people, whatever instrument you have available, you're just trying to like find your place in it. And then the goal, hopefully, with all of this stuff is, you know, to let go of thought, you know, to just be in the moment and drown out the voices inside your head.
Yeah.
My mom always used to tell me that her dad hated the Big Bopper because there's that line in the song about long neck goose.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what that's about. That's like a, you know, like a dick joke.
Oh, baby, that's what I see.
She would just be like, yeah, I don't want you listening to that like filthy music.
Yeah. Well, like, Big Bopper was out there. He was good, man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he had some good stuff.
I mean, we listen to that now and we're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, nowadays if somebody like, there's no big like no, they're gonna mention their dick now.
Yeah, they just can't say it.
that's the difference.
We've come past the metaphor.
Yeah. The metaphor that's old fashioned. So I mean I joke about this with my kids. I'm like, so when you become a parent, it's gonna be really interesting. To hear what your kids are listening to that you're going to find questionable.
Yeah.
Like, where do you go from where we are now? Yeah. You know, only time will tell.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right. They don't believe that's going to happen.
No, though. No. Nor should they. They just
I
live your life.
Wait.
Oh, my God. But that's
you look forward to.
That's a sad thing, though. It's just like, I was thinking about the lyrics of When I'm 64.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like a line that I always never really thought about. Uh-huh. But it's like kind of like a scary, like, because Paul says, like, you'll be older too.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
It's like when that's we get right. to that, when they get to that age,
yeah.
It's not like I'm going to stay this age.
Yeah.
It's like, that's, you know.
But then you see the Rolling Stones still getting up on stage, 80 years old. You don't worry about it.
Yeah, anymore. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, just you, I guess, as you, with age, comes wisdom, and what does that mean? There's the wisdom to know that it's a privilege to be around to see what you're seeing, because you know, I'm sure if anybody told you, Rick, that like, so you know, there's one day going to be a documentary about your shop.
I was like, yeah, right.
Like,
yeah. I still can't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, who the hell would want to see something about me?
No, there's a lot of nerds out there, you know? But, you know, nerdy about the right thing. You could be nerdy about something that's very cool and as is being shown with what you've done.
That's like a, because you recorded your own album, right?
I did.
Did you do that at your home?
I did. I recorded.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, and that's very real. The ear fatigue that happens is probably really soothing to just hear humans talk. But but yeah, that I recorded that album in my mom's basement. You know, this is like one of the ways I really feel blessed in life that that my mom is still around, that I can go visit her, that she's still cooking up a storm and making amazing food. And in the basement of that house is sort of like my musical incubator. Like, my dad was always heavy into music, playing music, huge tannoy speakers, you know. Marantz power amp, real hi-fi stuff, and just, you know, when you think about, like, you know, making a record and like bands in a studio listening to their stuff and being excited, like, you create an album, you create this immersive experience so you can give listeners the same feeling that the band had when they were mixing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember growing up and hearing from the basement, you know, my dad playing like all the reggae, you know, hearing the Commodore's Easy Like Sunday Morning, hearing Elton John's Daniel, and then going downstairs and like hearing the bass. And, you know, as a kid, you're not thinking, oh, that the bass really sounds good. You're not thinking about that, but you're feeling it. Your body knows, and it knows what it wants to feel. You know, so that created this, you know, a high bar sonically from the time I was 5. And then you get older, and you'd be like, oh, that's the bass that's doing that. Oh, that's really good speakers that's doing that. But so then to be able to like kind of create you know, to record in that environment that I've grown to love music in. And then to be able to, like, you know, the goal was always, you know, I want to be able to, like, record something in this space, see it through the gestation period, the incubation period, and to, like, then have it and then play it on the speakers in the same space, but have it go from an idea that was inside your mind, like a little seedling of a riff, whatever, and then have it come out of the speakers as a full-fledged, realized, mixed, mastered experience. And so I've been able to do that a couple times. And then, you know, because of the pandemic and having extra time and listening to podcasts about recording, all that, you get really into it. And then, you know, you get to the point where you're like, hey, I finished one song. All right, I finished two songs. Oh, there's like 10 songs. Maybe I can, like, mix all this. Oh, maybe I can, like, get this to the point where I can play it for people. Maybe I can get this to the point where I can release it. Oh, maybe I can reward myself with getting cover art for this project. Oh, maybe I can take that cover art and actually make it the cover of this album. Maybe I can put this on vinyl. And to, like, do all that and just, you know, just... You know, we're only here for, like, a short amount of time.
Not long enough.
Yeah. You're not, you know, and you see what's happening in this world. You see, like, you know, the war and all the, you know, you don't know when it's over for you. So that's why we make this evidence of us being here, you know.
Leaving your mark.
Yeah. Leaving your mark, you know, and that's what it's been done for us, and that's what you pass it along for other people. You got a guitar one day. Yeah. And you were like, wow, this is really cool. And, like, I want to make this. And then other people, you know, there's all these people that inspired you. And some of these people that have inspired you then come to you and they're like, can you make me a guitar? And that it's this beautiful way that all this stuff gets passed on.
That's awesome.
And there's so many ways to do it. So, so I recorded this album. And I, so as I was saying, I got the cover art to.
Are there gongs in it?
My wife has her album with the gong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She didn't let you use her gong.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be encroaching on her territory. But I think the next record will probably open or end with gong
on
it. But at some point.
We need some Kirk CDs in here.
Some what?
We need some Kirk CDs in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirk's
got to
give
me a picture, too. He's going to give me a picture last time.
We're rolling
along.
Yeah. But, but I actually have... I just got a sample of the artwork for it.
Oh, cool.
And it's like one of those situations where, like, I'm just hoping there's something on this album that's as beautiful as this artwork, because it's incredible what she did. So I recorded the album, and when it was done, I was, you know, we're on Instagram now. I found this artist that I really liked, and I said, hey, reached out, hey, I made an album, I love your art. If I sent you the record, do you think you can create something to it? And she said yes. And she, you know, after a month or so, sent me the piece. She showed me the piece on, you know, she sent it, like, the image in an email. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. And then she sent me the painting, the original, and it was so gorgeous. I just told her, like, I just want something that's, like, I just told the albums that I'm inspired by. I really love, like, the cover of Abraxas, you know.
Me too. Mati. That was always one of my favorites.
Yeah. And also Dark Side of the Moon. Like, mm-hmm. I like something mysterious where there's not too much on there. And she made something really magical.
Let's see.
So I'll show it to you. So the album, it was created during the pandemic, and... a lot of things that we were dealing with during the time, you know, dealing with racial violence. We were dealing with a pandemic, not knowing what's going on. So all these things are, like, in my mind, all these hopes for humanity. I mean, you know, and... It's sort of like a continuous hope of mine, but
more than ever now.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's so
I just
good.
Wanted something that that's people so can, like, cool. when listening to wow. it, they can just, like...
Wait, hold it up.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted
that's
something that beautiful. People can just, like, kind of stare at
yeah.
when listening to the record.
Yeah, I that's love the so eyeball cool. in the middle.
Oh, it so totally good. Has that vibe, too.
Yeah, it yeah. does.
It's like, I guess, because it's sort of like, you know, classic rock, you know, I come from a time where, you know, the music is not really made for TikTok or made for, like, 10-second intervals.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
and it's down, made listen. For people that can appreciate sitting down
yeah.
and getting into an album, you know, because no matter how much that's not necessarily in fashion anymore, people that are... you know, our age, or not even just people. I mean, it's just, you leave it there to be discovered, to like get into an album from beginning to end. If you can like watch a play or watch a movie from beginning to end, it's just like, you kind of want to, as Zappa, I guess maybe said, you know, making a movie for one's ears mm-hmm. and to have something like tactile yeah. to like hold on to as you get into an album. So,
pretty cool.
Thank you.
That was yeah. great. I was actually listening to it before we.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, we'll put
getting
it on
ready
today.
For this.
Yeah.
yeah, you should put it on.
You will.
But there's yeah, yeah. what's the song? It's like From Beyond, or it's like.
Oh, Land of Look Beyond.
Land of Look Beyond is like totally what you're talking about, because like you really like are waiting for like this payoff, and then you like come in with that like blazing guitar.
Oh yeah,
song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like beautiful.
Thank
it's
you so, so much. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, and that's a song that was like, you know, one of those songs that was like recorded really late at night. I just set up mics, and I remember playing the song acoustically for Rick on drums, and I was like, let's play that song, you know, that I was playing in the city for you last week. And thank God I was recording, and I just like, we just jammed. Like, it, you know, it was edited together because it was like, you know, the song's probably like 7 minutes or something like that, but we played for like 15 minutes. So it was just, like kind of like edited and shortened down. But it was the first time we had ever played it together at all.
Oh, wow.
The drums.
That's cool.
And, yeah. So it's like, so I remember when it was over, just like, being scared to look at my computer because, like, what if I wasn't recording? Like, I would, yeah, but thankfully it was. It's just like, okay.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that's yeah. it's cool that you got to hear that. And that
thanks for stopping by, Kirk.
Oh, you started already?
No, well, I'm rolling now.
Thanks, Kirk.
I'm rolling. All right.
Let's land this plane.
Let's settle, then Rick will go.
Okay, ready?
Thanks for stopping by, Kirk. Good Rick, seeing you, buddy.
Thank you for doing what you do. You're giving so many people so much joy.
I'm having a blast.
Yeah, it shows, man. And
We're all having a blast.
Yeah, from, yeah. From the looks of it, there's like a lot more stuff that's happening.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we got a lot of things in the works, in the frying pan.
A lot of renovations we did too.
Well, I'm glad to play a small part in
oh my god, this is good.
In your ear. Podcast Network.